5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening one and all, and welcome to the new Panic Room episode 300. That is a bit of a landmark, really. It's, you know, it only seems like 200 years ago we started all this malarkey. I think it deserves another cheer. So yeah, it is 9:30 Central Time on February. I think it's still February the 16th, and I hope everybody had a jolly Hallmark cards. Marketing day, as I like to call it, which is just cynical old sod that I am. And speaking of Valentine's,
come on, I'm with you.
Christina. How are you? Did you have a nice Valentine's? He said, pretending he gives a shit. I don't care. To be honest, it's done. Do you know my Valentine? I had a great one with me and my daughter because she was sadly, let's put it, she was made single, shall we say, about a month ago.
Aww.
With boyfriend of 7 months, which to be depressing though it may seem, you know, that was, she had a relationship longer than I've had in 7 years. So there was that. So we did face masks and fizzy wine and chocolate covered strawberries, Ferrero Rocher.
Wonderful.
Obviously, and Love Actually. We had a girly night, Valentine's night, and it was great. We had a great time.
I have to brag on the hubby real quick. He took me on an overnight down to Pigeon Forge, which is like our favorite area. And, you know, I had dinner at the Melting Pot, which is one of my favorite restaurants, and just wonderful, wonderful time. And then, you know, I didn't expect anything else, but then on the actual Valentine's Day, 36 red roses were, like, you know, delivered, and I was like, wow. Somebody must, you know, really love me. Yeah. So
what is the significance of 36, do I ask, or is it just... special offer or something?
I don't know, 36, I think. I don't know. You can ask him.
I know what 36 is. I just say what the significance was.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing. Just there was a lot. There was a lot of roses, and
that
I had to get
phenomenal.
You know, break out two different faces.
You must never doubt that he loves you. Obviously he does.
I know. I'm so spoiled. I love it.
You deserve to be spoiled. You are a wonderful, wonderful person. And as you know, I am not prone to bouts of sentimentality because I'm a cynical, hard-hearted old bastard. But 300 shows, Xtina, you know?
Yes.
300.
Yeah, we were
going to
do something.
We do something special every week. The fact that it's 300 is special enough, and I still remember the first one, the first show upon which we met, which was a god-awful clusterfuck of a show, but, you know, look at what came out of it. I mean, when you think about it, again, I mean, I'm getting a bit interest, we're allowed to be introspective at times like this, you know, that... not only the new Panic Room, not only another, you know, about 300 episodes. You know, Hellbound Box came from that specific moment in time.
Yeah,
and here we
amazing.
Are, you know, 300 shows and somewhere near 160 titles. We've published some of the greats of horror. We've interviewed some of the greats of horror. Mm-hmm. You know, and onwards and upwards, you know, who'd have thought at that point in time, you know, we'd have interviewed Ramsey Campbell and Richard Chisma and
B.C. Andrews.
B.C. Needman. And we would have
that
published, you know, Guy N. Smith and Graham Masterton and Jack Ketchum. And wow, you know, and Dracula, we published an official version of Dracula, which again, big moment.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we, you know, day to day, we it's work, you know, we put our heads down and crack on and we do this. And it's unfair of me to mention that, you know, the number of audio books, each and every one curated by you. And I don't know how many we've got now. We must have, 60 and odd of those by now. And we are turning out industry-leading anthologies and, you know, horror that is different. You know, I'm very proud of that.
Yes.
You know, we're not just doing the same old, you know, we strive to achieve, you know, to publish different, and I'm really proud of that. So I think, again, it's not often we do this. I think we can afford ourselves a pat on the back. So anywho, we have a very special show this evening, and I'm going to let you I'm going to let you tell the listener what we've got going on.
Yeah, I am excited about the show because I had the pleasure of working with both of these guests and helping out with the audiobook here. So, and I think it's so amazing when I can bring an author and the book narrator on the show together. That is so cool to me. So, yeah, that's what, you know, my little thing there is. I'm so excited. We have tonight we have horror author Isaac Hans. And we have audiobook narrator Isaiah Young. Woo!
That is brilliant. Oh, should I have pressed the button then? Oh.
Yes.
Oh, because I didn't know we were doing that. I thought you were going to tell me what was on, and then introduce them. But
that's
you sort of blended it all into one there, and I just got a bit lost.
I did
get a bit lost because I'm not as young as I was in those early days, you know, in our early halcyon days of the show. You know, it's now again, we can always tweak this in post production, obviously. So
No, I'm not.
But let's try again, shall we? Hey, Xtina, who we got on the show? Introduce our next guest, please.
Tonight on the Panic Room, we have horror author Isaac Hans and audiobook narrator Isaiah Young. Woo!
Hello.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
There's Isaiah.
Isaiah, yes, we should have Isaac as well.
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me up again.
Hey, thank you for joining us this late evening. And I have to say, again, great to speak to you guys. Yeah, Isaac, who is literally, I think, 20 minutes. He could have just popped round and done this, actually. 20 minutes down the road from me, to be honest. And Isaiah
and
is
that was entirely
also,
by chance, too.
Yeah, again, Isaiah is in, he's not too far from me either. We're all in Houston, or around Houston.
Yeah,
North Houston. Yeah, I'm in Spring, so, we're all neighbors, so there you have it.
Yeah, anything across, anywhere you did 30 minutes in Houston, that's close, so we're good.
Absolutely, yeah. So we are here to talk. So, Xtina, sorry, was I talking while you're interrupting? I'm ever so sorry.
Yes.
So sorry.
You guys could have all met for a beer, and you know we could be doing this on I don't know, Zoom or something. That'd be a lot.
We need. I keep saying that. You know, the three of us need to meet up and have lunch.
Yeah.
At some point, that would be tremendous. That will be tremendous.
Yeah,
so,
that'll be cool. We keep saying that, but we actually need to do that.
We will make. I promise. I will make it happen. We will make it happen.
Yeah,
definitely. Because it would be great to.
It'd be fun.
Great to get around the table and have beer and wings or whatever around. Because there's plenty of sports bars in here. He's just a sports bar in every corner, which is kind of interesting. But
so before we get officially started with this whole thing, I got a bone to pick. Nobody told me this was the 300th episode. this is a big deal. Like, this is 300 episodes.
Yeah.
Nobody
yeah,
said
yeah,
anything.
Yeah.
Like, hey, 300 episodes. So I heard at the beginning.
Well,
like, oh, man. Congratulations, guys. 300 episodes is a big deal.
Thank you.
Well, I blame Xtina for that because... I don't know what's happening until about 10 minutes before we come on the air, to tell you the truth. But I knew this was happening, and I've been excited all week for this one.
Yeah, we had a rough year last year, you know, personally and stuff, and there was just a lot going on. Mm. And so we missed a couple of shows here and there, so I wasn't positive when number 300 was going to land. And I am so happy that it landed tonight because, you know, I do. There's a special place in my heart when I can bring an author and the narrator on the same show because that's just so cool to me. I mean, as, managing the audiobooks, when it goes live and, I get to listen to it that way, I'm like, it feels like my baby too because I've, went through the whole process. So I figured that Isaiah feels the same about this book. I bet
you know this book
better than Isaac. Or at least just as good, right?
Yeah. No, I think we're probably on the same level. Yeah, because when he asked for the clip today, I immediately know how to find it. So, yeah, I guess
It was no problem at all. You had it. You're like, no, it's not even the right page. He didn't even have the right page. And Isaiah knew right where it was. That was great. So, yes, we are here to talk about Isaac's book, Neha's Mother. And, tell us a little bit about it, Isaac.
Oh, it'd be my pleasure. So, actually, it's kind of funny that the origins of this book did not actually stem from books. So I'll tell you a story. It's about 10 years ago. I think I was playing Black Ops or something like that online. And, there's a bunch of little kids on this thing, and they're cussing like sailors and being mad the entire time. And when the game was over, I remember just one day, our team obliterated the other team. I mean, just destroyed them. I mean, it was embarrassing. So at that point, you should just take your Xbox and throw it down the stairs, obliterated. And what really, really got to me was the way they were talking. So their exact words were, oh, yeah, y'all just got raped. And I was like, whoa, whoa, no, no, no. That's not what that word means. That's not what that word means. You know, it's not funny to talk like that. And then, obviously, my mind started thinking, should I get on my mic? Should I start cussing these kids out? But was it really necessary? Because they probably didn't know any better. They were like 10 to 15 years old. And it really hit me as to how desensitized we became in this society of what that really means, of what domestic abuse and sexual assault. I mean, I don't mean to preach. Please forgive me. But this is where my inspiration for the book came in. And I've been wanting to be an author since I was 17, and I finished about 50% of 3 other books with nonsensical plots that made no sense. I hope they never see the light of day because it would be embarrassing. And then it's been on my mind for a very long time just to write a novel that kind of brings light to a lot of the issues we face in this society, what I would consider a pandemic just as bad as COVID-19 or anything else. And then finally, in 2018, I just felt that one year is going to turn into 10, and I don't want to wait anymore. So I just opened up my laptop, and with The Office playing in the background, I wrote chapter one, and that was back in 2018. So that was the inspiration for the book, and here we are now. It's been out up until this day. Even though the book was written, all the characters were just abstract voices in my head. So I just want to take this time to thank Isaiah for just giving the book life, because up until when he narrated the book, I didn't even know what my character sounded like. So, I just wanted to give a special thanks. I don't know if there's anybody better than Isaiah who has done the book, and I'm eternally thankful.
Well, I'm just going to jump in. You know, and I had the pleasure of seeing this book in its rawest form. I mean, it came across my desk when it needed a polish. But I have to say that, and again, I don't want to do spoiler alerts, but there was one. In fact, probably not. There's one, Isaac knows the part that I'm going to mention. There's one particular part that literally sent shivers up my spine, and I'm a jaded old bastard now with horror. You know, I've seen it all, heard it all, read it all. Not very, very little moves me horror wise, and it did. It just sent literally. I broke out in goose flesh and shivered, and it was just one line. And for me, that sold me on the book, and I thought, wow, you know, if one line of the book can do that for me, it's going to be a good one. And there's a couple of, I mean, it's a great story. It appeals to any horror fan, I'd say, but any parent, especially any parent of a small girl, which obviously she's not so small now, but obviously I can identify with that. And to be fair, daughters are, horrific anyway. They're just...
They are. They really are.
They are awful. They are terrible, terrible beings.
I have a two-year-old, and she already learned how to roll her eyes, so I completely understand.
Yes, she does. And
2 years old, too.
She's the boss in your house, absolutely. And I've met her, and I have to say, listeners, she is the cutest. She's so cute, it's sickening. She's the cutest little thing. Butter wouldn't melt, but you can tell there's malevolence lurking behind those eyes, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
I couldn't have said it better myself. She already runs the house, and I always tell people,
yep.
Oh, my daughter's 2 years old. She's showing me attitude, and they always say, oh, just wait 35 years, it'll go away. I was like, oh, great.
Yeah.
So,
probably not.
Like a,
probably
like
not.
Long
no.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah.
You're lying. It doesn't.
No.
Nope. It doesn't.
Yeah. I'm going to date myself here. My daughter's going to be 25 next month. And no, it does not go away. At least not yet. It hasn't. She is still just a wild child. And, you know, they're great. Daughters are great. But evil. They're very evil. But
after reading Neha's mother, I don't know. I hope your opinion of daughters doesn't change, because it's something to put daughters in a new light.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, you know, I'm going to say I still have to read the book, and I still have to listen to the audiobook like all the way through, because I've heard bits and pieces, and I do want to ask Isaiah how he comes up with the different voices, and how do you keep them straight? And I just can't imagine the work that goes into this, and how, yeah, I mean, I do listen, you know, and that's why I have to actually read the book straight through, because I get bits and pieces here and there, but yeah, I've heard some clips that gave me the chills. And I didn't even have a huge, you know, I didn't have the content really, but I was like, wow. Tell us, Isaiah, how do you do that?
So first of all, the flattery is amazing. I appreciate it all. And it's amazing.
It's well deserved.
It's a whole process. Like, so first of all, when I first go through a book, I read it to myself, and usually, you know how when you read a book, you kind of like make up the voice in your head because you want to get the character mm-hmm. in your head. So usually that's kind of where the voice comes out from at first, and then I'll make a note to myself of kind of like what I want that character to sound like. And then when I go in the booth, that's when the whole like, okay, I'll try it once and I'll listen to it and see how that sounds. I'll go back and try it a different way. You know, it's a lot of trial and error to get a character right, because sometimes you... Like it was one character I did for Isaac, and he sent it back. He's like, no, dude, that sounds too cartoonish. What was the cartoon of who? He said, no, dude, that sounds too much like a female. You can't.
Oh, that's right.
It's
the first
that.
Time around
that
we did.
Yeah, so yeah, we did really, it's a trial and error type
like,
thing,
yeah.
Really.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like, seriously, though, it's a trial and error. Like, so I appreciate that kind of mm-hmm. feedback. Like, yeah, okay, so. I went in a booth and tried it. That didn't work. Let me go back and find something else. Let me listen to some examples of this kind of person and see what they sound like and see if it comes out right. And then I'll send it to them. You'll go, yeah, and then we'll go from there. But then to keep track of everything, it's kind of like a spreadsheet, because you don't want to, like, lose. It's a spreadsheet mixed with recording. So you, like, make the note of when you write, when you're going through the book, okay, this is what this character's background is. You got to come up with a voice that. Then when you go through and you record it the first time, I always, me personally, I like to take a snippet of that character so I can always go back to it. When I get to that character, mm-hmm. I can listen to myself so I can get that character back. Because me trying to just keep track of 30 different characters in a book, even 10 different characters in a book is ridiculous. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. A couple of months ago, we had a clip for one of the excerpts, and it was raw, like it wasn't polished yet. And I don't think it was up until that point that we, you know, I was like, wow, I cannot believe the amount of work that goes into this, because, you know, all we hear is the amazing job when you're, you know, acting out the book and you've got the different voices going and you don't stumble on any words at all. I stumble when I just try to tell a story. So, you know, I'm like, you know, listening to a raw version where the voice actor, you know, she stumbled on her words, she stopped, she started
mm-hmm.
again. I was
mm-hmm.
like, wow, we don't get to hear that. So I think it definitely gave me a better appreciation for what you guys do. I just, I'm so impressed.
Oh, yeah. So you get to one point, you just go, oh, I didn't like the way that sounded. Let me start all the way over again. And then you start that back over. You just go through a whole paragraph back over. I've done a whole book. Well, not particularly this one, but I've done a whole book just like me listening to it going, I didn't like the way that sounded. Let me go knock this out real quick. Go back through and fix some stuff in here. But it's a process. It's a process.
Yeah.
But you got to learn to just get it done and not try to over process yourself or over critique yourself into it.
And I think for the author as well, it's hard to hear somebody else give life to your book, because you, as the author, Isaac, do you feel like, you know, you hear it in your head? So when you hear it from Isaiah, isn't there a part of you that's like, wow, that character does not sound like that? But then you have to go, well, wait a minute. You know, I mean, it still sounds really good. Just because it's not the way you heard it doesn't mean it's wrong. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny that earlier you used the word child or baby or something to describe the book. And to speak to your point, that's exactly true. Because when it's your baby, mm-hmm. then you have an image of your child. So,
yes.
as I said before, there was nobody better than Isaiah to have done this novel. But one thing that nobody can do is match what's in my brain. So,
mm-hmm.
kind
yeah.
of Andre had a voice in my head, and Lakshmi had a voice in my head, and all these characters had a voice in my head. And it's interesting, because when it comes to life, it's never going to sound like exactly what it did in your mind. But you have to be accepting of the fact that that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And and I want to mention something that
like
Isaiah did not
girl.
Mention. Absolutely. Especially coming from someone I'm sure does not sound like a 4-year-old girl. But
I
also wanted to mention that Isaiah...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, go ahead, right? Go ahead.
Oh, I want to mention something Isaiah did not mention is half the characters in the book are Croatian and the other half are of Indian descent. Now, there's a lot of accents there and a lot of getting it just right, and then there's different dialects within those accents, and Isaiah nailed that. And I just wanted to ask Isaiah, like, what was like that for you? Because switching from Croatian to Indian, I mean, that could not have been easy.
No, it wasn't. But it was, I like the challenge. Because I like that's part of my whole job, is to learn voices and try to learn different dialects, learn how to twist my tongue to sound like a dialect that doesn't, like I said earlier, that doesn't sound cartoonish. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, man, I didn't know it was going to be Croatian characters. He didn't tell me that. So it was kind of a, oh, wait, holy shit moment. Like, oh, my God, this is going to be crazy. But then you got to, like, put your feet down and plant your feet down and get to YouTube and get to looking at actual dialect videos and things like that. And, you know, some people can't pick it up, but I feel like I'm the type of person that can actually pick up and, you know, like mimic people very well. So once I hear it, I can almost try to like mimic it. And if I like to have a person one-to-one, like I had with Isaac, it's really nice to have, because you can go, hey, how does this sound? And I'll go, no, I don't like that too much. Can you switch it up there? So it doesn't bother me too much when the author goes, hey, can you switch this up a little bit? Like, all right, let me try something else. And if they give me enough feedback and it works out, it comes to a beautiful project like this one did. I really like the way this turned out.
I'm just having so much fun here, but we have an excerpt. We have a clip that we're going to play, an excerpt of the book. Do you need to set it up, Isaac?
Yeah, sure. So this is a scene. Now, if anybody read the back of the book, you'll kind of see what we're talking about here. So one day, just to keep it short, there was a thunderstorm, and a character named Andre caught his 3-year-old daughter sleepwalking and mumbling some rhythmic chants during the lightning strikes. It was incredibly terrifying. There was a scene involving a refrigerator that I don't even want to get into, because I lost 3 readers just from that scene because they said they couldn't continue. So it was definitely a terrifying scene. Yeah, it was. I don't know if I should have put the scene in the beginning of the book. Maybe I should save it for the end. But regardless, what would anybody do when your daughter starts saying weird chants and sleepwalking during a thunderstorm? And let's just say she did some really creepy stuff and she was only 3 years old. He decided to contact a neurologist. And the neurologist that was to save his daughter, let's just say eventually something happened to her and she met her demise in a hospital. And this is the scene that leads right up to that scene.
Okay,
right. I'm gonna press the button, and here we go.
Dr. Wayne prepared to call in the night and made her way down the hallway. Dr. Chakrabarti surely couldn't be much later. As she passed Elvira's room, Dr. Wang glanced through the half-open door and noticed the shadow on the wall next to the patient's bed appeared to move. Looking a little to the right, Dr. Wang's breath caught in her throat. With a choking gasp, she staggered backward, tripped over her own feet, and landed flat on her ass in the corridor. There, in the small, cluttered room, Elvira Ivanov sat upright in her bed, staring directly at the doctor with cold, black eyes. Around her, the monitors beeped and flashed as if nothing was out of the ordinary, as if Elvira Ivanov were still deep in her coma. Dr. Wang struggled to pick herself up off the floor. The pain in her tailbone was excruciating, and there was an odd tingling sensation in her left leg. Slowly, she made her way into Elvira's room. Dr. Wang examined her patient. Elvira's eyes were wide open, but lacked any sign of consciousness. Her body was perfectly still, and her face had an expression that managed to be both calm and threatening. Her lips were slack around the endotracheal tube, around which drool collected to drip from the corners of her mouth. Had she not been sitting bolt upright, Elvira would have appeared quite dead. This was a new phenomenon to Dr. Wang. In her 12 years of dealing with coma patients, she had never seen this happen before. With sharp spikes of pain shooting through her spine and down her legs, the doctor approached Elvira's bedside, and as she did so, she heard a faint noise from the room across the hallway.
No, doctor. No vayas. Ella está con el diablo. No vayas. Te necesito.
The voice was breathy, haunting. Dr. Wang dismissed it as the patient, Michelle Garcia, had been making random noises since she arrived. Dr. Wang looked into Elvira's unblinking, lifeless eyes.
Elvira, can you hear me?
She leaned in to make eye contact.
Elvira Ivanov, is there any way you can communicate with me?
Scooting around the bed to check her patient's vitals, the doctor noted Elvira didn't move or even follow her progress with her eyes. Her vitals were normal. But this close, Dr. Wang saw that the stat sensors once connected to Elvira had been removed.
This should have set the machines off. How odd, she thought.
It was imperative that Elvira lay back down on the bed, otherwise her breathing tube may dislodge. So, Dr. Wang took a deep breath and touched Elvira's shoulder. No response. Then, she pushed gently to see if her body was malleable. It was not. Elvira was as stiff as a steel beam. Trying a different tact, Dr. attempted to lift Elvira's leg by the foot. It, too, was rigid and unmoving. Dr. Wang was about to let go of Elvira's foot when she felt the rigidity leave her leg. She was able to lift it with little effort. It was as if Elvira had done it on purpose. Suddenly, Elvira's head jerked toward the doctor with a savage grimace and loud hiss. She yanked the tube from her throat, and before Dr. Wang could react, Elvira lunged and sank her teeth into her cheek. Dr. Wang yowled in agony as Elvira shook her head like some rabid dog and tore away a bloody clump of her face.
Death!
Elvira growled, her words bubbling with fresh blood.
Is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James, and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media. Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
The day is dawning on a Texas Sunday morning. How I long to be there with Marie, who's waiting for me there. Every lonely city where I hang my hat ain't as half as pretty as where my baby's at. Is this the way to Amarillo? Every night I've been hugging my pillow, dreaming dreams of Amarillo and sweet Marie who waits for me. Church bell ringing, hear the song of joy that it's singing for the sweet Maria and the guy who's coming to see her. Just beyond the highway there's an open plain, and it keeps me going through the wind and rain. Is this the way?
Part 2.
Well, we are back with part 2. So I couldn't resist. I had to play that because obviously, you know, it's a Texas tune and we've got a Texas flavor to the Texas flavor to the show tonight. But I've got to ask Isaac, obviously, you know, it's a familiar story. I mean, I, you know, always wanted to write from, you know, before I was born, I think, practically. How easy do you find it to sit and write and be creative?
I think it's pretty easy as long as you remember one thing. I don't believe in really taking notes. I mean, it might work for other people. It doesn't work for me, though. As long as I know what the basic plot of the story is and the moral that I'm trying to achieve, it's not very difficult because I don't believe in making a reality out of nothing. Every day that we live, we don't know what's going to happen 15 minutes from now or 20 minutes from now or even a day from now. So whenever I write, I just go line by line and imagine what are random things that can happen to us.
Yeah, I'm scared now. I'm scared what the next 15 minutes is going to be. What, do you know something I don't? Something's going to happen.
Oh, I wish.
I'm frightened now. Something's going to happen to me.
So that's probably the tamest, scariest part in the book.
And that's the philosophy I use whenever I write, that if you're trying to determine what's going to happen in the next chapter, that's just not reality. You know, so let's say I have a scene where I'm in the street or I'm in the car. I don't know where I'm going to be even 10 minutes from that. So I kind of feel that the creative juices will flow in a more natural way. So honestly, it's not really, really that tough. As long as the main moral and the main thing I'm trying to express is out by the time the book is done, then I am more than happy.
And so my other question, and I'm enjoying this because I always get these questions thrown at me, is why horror? What made you gravitate towards horror?
I've read numerous different genres throughout my life, and horror to me really embodies every emotion somebody can have. Because of all the genres I've read, it's only in horror that you're going to see equal parts horror, equal parts love, equal parts sex, equal parts philosophy, and I think we need all of that. And I believe that the genre of horror expresses that the best. Also, of all the emotions you can possibly feel from any genre that you read, getting scared, I believe, is the strongest one. It stays with you. It doesn't go away. And while you're trying to sleep at night, it creeps up on you, gives you a nightmare. You wake up, that's what you're thinking about. And then the moral of the story is going to stay with you as well. So because of that, I feel that horror is just the best genre if we really want something to stick like a tattoo. So I just don't think there's any other genre, especially when you're trying to write about socially relevant issues. Like, for example, Neha's Mother is not an easy read. It's about domestic abuse. It's about a lot of things that I consider, and I'm sure everybody considers, a pandemic in the soul that we live in. But if we just think of it, like, for example, if you just think of somebody getting hurt or somebody getting abused or just something bad that happens that we don't want to talk about, then how can you really feel what these victims are going through? There's no other genre to express how bad this is than horror, because the victims are living in a true horror story themselves. So with what I'm trying to achieve, there's no other genre that would possibly work for me.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, crosses my mind. I mean, obviously romance is a big chunk of the market, the book market, but romance just doesn't, you know, it's nice and, you know, love and all that crap. But so again, I'm a little bit cynical, I admit a little bit cynical with the whole all of that nonsense. But like you say, I mean, nothing, certainly for me, nothing grabs you more on a more visceral, deep down level. Because at the end of the day, we're all scared of death. I mean, we're all trying to deal with that. And certainly as you get older. And I think for me, you know, horror, it taps into that. It taps into, like, as you say, things that go bump in the night. The, you know, some of our earliest childhood memories of the fear of whatever's lurking under the bed and in the shadows and the dark. There are grown people I know who are terrified of the dark for whatever reason, whether it's a deep-rooted childhood thing or something more recent or whatever. I think fear is something that unites all of us. And I think nothing illustrates that more than the recent pandemic. You know, it united people in fear. And I think horror, as horror writers, we do that. You know, we dig into that and wave fear in front of people's faces. And for me, I mean, that's the best part of the job. I have to say, if you can, people say, yeah, that scared me, or it gave me this reaction, or like that section in Neha's Mother, you know, that genuinely dug into my psyche, and it just touched me on a level that just is very rare for me these days. I can't imagine any other genre, no matter how well written, could ever do that.
I'll admit, there was parts when I was reading this book where I had to stop and just, like, take a second to just, like, okay, hold on, let me process what I just read. All right.
Wow.
All right, let me go back. Okay, let's start again. Okay, let's go. All right, I'm ready again. Because, no, like, some, like,
yes,
some parts, so I don't want to get too personal, but I lost my sister back in early 2021. So in this book, is like right when he asked me to start doing that, it was around the time we were all getting the book together and starting to get the book in the process. So this hit me on a personal level. I don't want to get too much into what the book goes in, but this hit me on a personal level. So it took me some points in time in the book where I was like, hold on, let me stop, let me process this. All right, let me go back in. And then there were some parts where I was just like, whoa. This dude is crazy. What did he just write? But like you said, like Isaac said earlier, horror is a great, like, I never thought about it until he actually said it. Horror is a great place where you can get a smorgasbord of every genre. So, like, you take a person that reads a love story. They don't want a horror part of that love story. Or somebody who wants to watch a comedy. They just want that comedy. They want to laugh. But when you're in that horror genre, you'll have some part love, you'll have some laughs, you'll have some sad times, and you're also going to get your ass scared. So it's a lot. That's why, and I never thought about that till Isaac just said it, and that's a great way to put that. I'm glad he said that.
Right. And I wish more people in society would understand that horror books are not all horror, because I think that's what turns off a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
Because, okay, for example, let's take Stephen King's It. I don't think the clown was even in, like, 25 pages out of 1,000. Like, he's really not
right.
in the book. Like, hardly.
Yes. Yeah.
Horror is just an element of a book, but a majority of Neha's Mother, anyone that read it will know part two, there's no horror whatsoever. I didn't see a need for it. It's actually a love story. It's only been part one and part three.
Mm.
So,
yeah. Well, I said this before about It. I mean, for me, you could take all the supernatural stuff and the clown out of it, and it would still be a damn good coming of age story.
Absolutely.
It would be a brilliant story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't. It didn't really need all that, you know.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, horror is just an element. I really think true horror books, I think when you're having a scary scene on every single page, then it's a sign that's not a very good book. You know, I mean, the fact is, it's an element. It's something you put into it. It's not the whole thing. You wouldn't define something you make in your, you know, whenever you're making food for your family, you don't define it based on one thing you put in. So I want more people to know that horror is just an element of the book. It's not the entire thing.
Yeah, I can't agree more than that, because I do happen to like romance, but when you read a romance book, that's all you're getting is romance. You know, and I want more, but I also want romance, you know, but I want more, you know, and so yeah, I definitely agree. And you get everything, most of the time, if you're dealing with a good author, that is, you get everything when you're reading.
This has a good love story, too. This has a good love story. I like that. I did like the love story.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a good love story.
I want to say to Isaiah and James, thank you so much for the feedback. And that's what I'm going for. Not trying to make anybody feel comfortable and feel warm inside, because that's really not the point. There's so many pandemics that are hitting this world right now, and if COVID-19 has taught us anything, is that there is suffering. And what genre am I possibly going to use if I'm trying to make a point about rape culture and child abuse and domestic issues? What other genre can I use except this? So I just don't think that if this is philanthropy, then there's no other genre.
I had a quick question for Isaiah. When you're looking for books to narrate, what do you? What is your favorite genre?
Oh man, that's a good question. So I do some volunteer work on the side for it's a learning ally where they help kids learn with like reading disabilities, like dyslexia and things like that. So I've gotten a chance to read a lot of books that I necessarily wouldn't have gotten a chance to narrate on a, you know, financial scale. And I would have to say, like, the fantasy type books or like,
really?
just get out of your own. And yeah, like, to get out of your own head and go into another world and come out of it and go, wow. Oh, that was fun. And like, make voices. I got to be a little bunny rabbit in a bear.
Nice.
And I got to be John Henry. And so it's cool. So you get to do different things like that. So, but yeah, in horror and like these, like the anthology books that I've done with you, those are good because I like to get into different characters. I like to have a chance to expand and go, okay, well, that character's getting a little bored. Oh, here's another character. It's not bored anymore. Let's go. So let me try to figure out a new character. So, yeah. So that's why I like anthology and, like, fantasy books and things like that.
Yeah, I was just asking that because you did horror very well. I mean, just listening to that little clip, and I didn't expect, you know, toward the end there and the growly voice and the – I was like, holy – crap, I have to go to bed after this, and I have chills right now, and now I'm totally creeped out and glad there are no, you know, children in the house. And
I lost 3 days of sleep when I heard that for the first time.
It's funny you say that, because I'm not really a big horror, I'm not a big horror type person. Like, I'll watch maybe one or two horror films a year, and like maybe read one or two books a year, but I'm not really. But it just seems like when somebody gives me that horror book or somebody asks me to do like a scary character, it just comes out the easiest.
Yeah. I would have thought that would, you know, oh, you'd definitely say, oh, horror. Horror is my passion, because that was, and so many times when I would, send over a chapter or so for Isaac and he would listened to it, and he's like, that's creeped me out, you know. And I'm like, man, if you can creep out the author of the book with, you know, your voice,
yeah,
or just reading your work, that's amazing.
That's a point I made so many times. I was like, I wrote this book. These are my words. Why is it scaring me like I'm hearing it for the first time?
Yes.
I couldn't understand that. But that goes back to the first point, that these are just – I never realized how abstract the voices were in my head until, like, they brought it to life. I mean, this might be my character, but I've never heard
right.
them speak before. Yeah, so I lost a lot of sleep. I guess it was okay, but it was definitely something.
YOLO, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I am having so much fun. I keep trying to I wish that I had scheduled it for a little bit longer, because it's going to be really sad when I have to say goodbye. But, yeah, I know. I'm thinking that Isaac has to hurry up and get another book finished so that, you know, we can just do this all over again, you know.
Absolutely. There we go. There we go.
Really? So
I have two other books in the pipeline that are done. So just stay tuned,
nice.
And definitely we'll be here again to definitely talk about them.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you're working on now, and how you know, close are we to you know.
Yeah, it is done. I just got back the master file. So I'm just making my reviews right now, and hopefully it should be out. I can't say a specific time frame. It's going to be within the next few months. It's going to be great.
Awesome.
And I have to say, I mean, I have a little bit of insider knowledge. We've just had completed the cover art
nice.
For the next book, and it is breathtaking. I have to say, it's been done by Kevin Hart, who's done a lot of Hellbound books covers as well.
Yeah,
and it Isaac has a knack of tapping into anybody who's a parent. He can tell he's a parent of a small child, and again, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. It absolutely terrifying. It really is.
It was terrifying and equally emotional for any parent. That's exactly it. It's every parent's
yes.
nightmare. The cover itself will terrify you. I mean, forget the words inside it. And it was brilliantly done. I want to thank James for making that happen. And yeah, if you're a parent, or even not a parent, just your basic sense of emotional capacity the cover is going to take a lot of. I'm at a loss for words. I'm just saying it is incredible, and I cannot wait till it gets out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, nice. Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how about yourself, Isaiah? What are you working on right now?
I'm at a stalemate right now. I got nothing going on in the pipeline, just working on some personal stuff that I got going on, just trying to get some stuff up.
Some nice quiet time.
Got a website, though. You can go to my website. Yeah, I got a nice quiet time. I had to take a break for a while. A lot of things is getting crazy, so I just had to take a little pause. I'll be back. I'll have some stuff going here in a little bit.
Definitely, definitely. Because we definitely have to do this again. I've had so much fun. And for, I'm going to say it again to pat ourselves on the back a little bit here, for me and James's 300th show. That's amazing. And
go us.
We've gotten to talk to so many amazing authors, and I just feel like I'm, you know, so many, you know what, I had an author the couple weeks ago that I booked, and after I booked her and everything, she asked how much we charged, and I was like, what? Do people charge for fuck? Because, you know, we can be
seriously?
Making some money.
Oh, my God. We've missed 300 missed opportunities there. Oh, my goodness.
I know. I'm like, we have been so blessed to talk to so many amazing people. And so that's our payment, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm like, no, we just...
Well,
this,
no, I'm going to stop you there. No, cash would be better. You know, I'm just putting that out there, you know?
This is the time of the show that I would beg the author for a signed copy of his book, but I already have one. So, you know, so there is that. Yeah, I know. I shameless, I do it every week. But I love my book so much. But yeah, this has been so great. We are just about out of time for our show. And I want to thank you guys both so much for coming on. And you have to promise to come back.
Oh, of course.
That goes anytime.
Marvelous. And I promise I will get with both of you guys, and we will have lunch sometime in the next few weeks, yeah?
And FaceTime.
We will do that. I promise I will make that happen. I will liaise with both of you, and we will
send you pictures of our delicious food and make you envious.
Oh,
that's right.
Thanks.
We can FaceTime Xena.
We'll just have her on FaceTime the whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
we can
do
that. She can watch us eat. She'd love that. Yes.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Right, and we'll speak to you very soon, guys. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Bye. And it is, time has beaten us, Xtina, I'm afraid to say. And it is time when we say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
How y'all doing? We just saw y'all just a minute ago. We haven't been here in 3 years. They put us on this TV show, and then they said, no more TV shows for a while. People keep seeing you guys. They're playing one of our songs on the radio now. With yeah, that's not that one. That's too dirty. We're going to play the other one. When you think I loved you all I can, I'm gonna love you a little bit more. Come on over here and lay by my side. I've got to be touching you. Let me rub your tired shoulders. My mind.